Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please, check out some of our past shows at AnswersForTheFamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests as well as dynamic co-hosts discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, we're going to have a very interesting topic today. But before we get to that, I want to introduce my guest co-host, which is V. Gomez. She's the CEO and lead instructor of Beach Yoga SoCal. And one of the reasons why I chose V to co-host is because she's a really good match to our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, Healthy Habits Suck. What does that mean? Okay, and the subtitle is How to Get Off the Couch and Live a Healthy Life, Even If You Don't Want To. V, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Alan. I appreciate it.
All right. So now before we get to our guests, let's dive into a little bit about healthy habits. And to start with, tell us a little bit about Beach Yoga SoCal.
Yes. So Beach Yoga SoCal is actually LA's iconic beach yoga studio. And we work with the city of Santa Monica to make beach yoga classes accessible year-round right on the beach. And I mean, I think everyone knows that yoga is good for you. I think yes. At this point, we're at that understanding. So we like to heighten the yoga experience by practicing by the ocean. The ocean has so many benefits. So, you know, just being there, it activates your parasympathetic nervous system, engages all your senses. It allows you to breathe deeper, take in all that vitamin D, and just leave feeling amazing. So not only are the benefits of yoga there, you're adding your benefits of being outside.
Well, I'm looking forward to trying it. And one of the reasons is because I also believe in grounding and the value of the sunlight. So as someone who has done yoga, but done it indoors, I thought, you know, separately, I do grounding, you know, so I mean, you know, so I make sure that I get my skin on the earth. And so share a little bit about that for those that may not understand the value of grounding or what we're getting from the sun every day.
Yeah. So it's funny you're saying that because even in my classes, I talk about how as soon as you get on the sand, you immediately feel a sense of grounding.
Yes.
You know, and what does that really mean? You know, putting your toes in the sand, feeling the energy of the earth, it just has this sense of calming and kind of brings you back into perspective about what's important, right?
Yeah.
And then being by the ocean and the vitamin D is good for your bones. It helps lower blood pressure. It supports your immune system. And the sun just overall makes you feel amazing because it increases your serotonin. So
exactly.
Just spending time in nature is great.
All right. Well, one of the places in which I know that I'm going to be working on it is during the Health and Wellness Festival. So share a little bit about the Health and Wellness Festival, when it's coming up, where it's going to be, and what people can do while they're there.
Yeah. So the Health and Wellness Beach Festival is this inaugural community collaborative festival that's built around health, wellness, arts, entertainment, philanthropy. And on top of that, it's going to be on the beach. So what could be more fun? It's going to be on Sunday, September 22nd from 1 to 6 p.m. It's on Santa Monica Beach at 2600 Oceanfront Walk. And the event is free. So yay, how amazing is that? It's open to all ages. It has a wide variety of sports, games, activities, entertainment for families, individuals, professionals, and groups. And the mission of the event is really to just inspire, empower, and spread positivity, integrity, collaboration, wellness, and just community in a free, non-toxic, alcohol-free time.
I love it. Now, I know that they're still getting things set up. If somebody hears this and they go, how do I get involved? You know, what can I do to become a part of it, or how can I support it? What's the best way that they can do that?
So we're actually working in conjunction with Iron Sharpens Iron Los Angeles. And, you know, they're an amazing working group that is the way to sort of the bridges the gap between this community of health and wellness and just the rest of the population. So, you know, we're looking for vendors and other professionals that are want to get their word out about what they do, especially if it is in the health and wellness field. And they can just reach out to Beach Yoga SoCal or Iron Sharpens Iron Los Angeles to get involved.
Sounds great. And if anybody is, if you're at your computer and you want to shoot out an email or something, you can go to info@isi-la.com. All right. So with that, you know, okay, so at this point, so for everybody out there, if you want to get outside, if you want to enjoy a day at the beach, if you want to bring your family, or if you want to come solo, it doesn't matter, if you want to make new connections, if you want to engage in some sports or activities, if you want to try healthy foods or drinks, or just support your local community, if you want to learn how to live happier, healthier, and have some fun, attend the Health and Wellness Beach Festival. And again, if you missed it, that's Sunday, September 22nd. So, and if you need to get more information, another way is to go to www.beachorgasocal.com. All right. Okay, now let's start talking a little bit about healthy habits, and we're going to bring in our guest. So our guest today is Dana Lee Bagley, PhD, and it's interesting about her because as I was getting the information, you know, I'm learning more, and so as I'm gathering information, I find out that she exercises readily, but then she admits that she rarely enjoys it. She says she's a regular runner who competes in 10K races, and I'm like, okay, great, I've done that, and she goes, but she never gets a runner's high. She drinks green smoothies, which for those that know me know that I do every day, but she hates vegetables, so...
I know.
Yeah. And she says that, you know, and often when her child asks to go do some physical activity like biking or swimming, she thinks, crap, I don't want to do that. But she does it anyway. So so when I got a chance to read the book and to gather some information, I thought, what a great thing for everybody out there who doesn't get excited over a lot of these things but still wants to be healthy. So... Now, Dana is also, she's a registered clinical psychologist. She specializes in health. She holds an assistant professor appointment in the Department of Family Medicine and cross appointments in the departments of surgery and psychology and neuroscience at Dalhousie University. And she's an adjunct professor appointment in the Department of Industrial and Organizational Psychology at St. Mary's University. She worked as a clinical health psychologist at the Nova Scotia Health Authority for the multi-organ transplant program, which was interesting to me. She's the director of the Center for Behavioral Change, which conducts research and training in chronic disease management. And she is an internationally recognized trainer in acceptance and commitment therapy. Dana was the recipient of the 2017 Woman of Excellence Award for her exceptional contributions to health, sports, and wellness. Her areas of expertise include facilitating healthy behavioral change, managing and treating obesity, adapting to chronic health conditions, professional resiliency / burnout prevention in healthcare providers and healthy workplaces. Dana, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I had to tell you that there are so many things that, you know, I was thinking that, you know, I don't know how we're going to get all this in 1 hour because there are so many things that you're doing that are intriguing to me. One of the ones that has, you know, the internationally recognized trainer in acceptance and commitment therapy. I love that because I think there are so many things out there in which if people just looked at it a little differently, they would accept things more, they would recognize more, or they would get more involved. just by learning a little bit more about what's out there. So anyway, I just want you to know I was very excited to not only talk about what you've done, but I'm so glad that you're out there, and I want to acknowledge that it's much appreciated.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. So I've already had comments, and for those that know, I tend to read the books of people who I'm going to have on the show. I read them at the gym, so they, you know, people now after doing this 10 years see me pedaling at the gym, and they walk up and go, "All right, so what's the book this time?" And as they look at it and they go, "What? How come it starts with?" How come it starts with healthy habits suck? And so my first question is, what made you think to name the book Healthy Habits Suck?
Yeah, well, for people who know me well, they know that I actually say this a lot. So I have done a lot of work with people with chronic health diseases. And, you know, a lot in healthcare, people try to make it sound like it's not going to be that bad, whatever healthy habit it is, you know, lifestyle change that people need to make. And my approach is really like, no, it probably is going to suck. So what's going to make it worth it for you to do this work? And I think I think a lot of that resonates with a lot of people, because I don't think everybody does enjoy, you know, exercise, and they don't wake up, you know, wanting to have a kale smoothie for breakfast. And so it speaks to those people who it doesn't feel like it comes naturally for, and how to still incorporate that into their lives, even if they don't, you know, look forward to running or any of those things.
Now, I know we're using the word healthy a lot, but if everybody right now that's sitting at their computer, if they Googled how to be healthy, what do you think they'd find?
So you'd find a lot of websites, you know, trying to make it easier for you, like tricks, or like these simple foods will help you lose weight, or, you know, way to make exercise more enjoyable. And again, my book takes like a totally different approach, which is just that let's acknowledge that it's probably not that appealing, that if there's discomfort that happens when you're doing healthy habits. And that's for, you know, reasons related to like our evolutionary history, why we don't like these things. And so let's find a reason to make it worth it for you to do it, rather than convince you that it's not going to be that bad. Because what happens, I think, for people is then they do start doing it and they don't enjoy it, or it does feel hard. They think, oh, there must be something wrong with me because everyone else seems to enjoy it. And this messaging is really about, no, you can hate every minute of it. As long as you're willing to do it, you can still be healthy.
Yeah, and that's great that you said that, because even when I was looking in reading through your book, you were talking about how, you know, pain is a part of life, right? Can you just expand a little bit about that and what you're saying, and how, like, you know, I don't necessarily love getting up in the morning and, you know, getting into that chaturanga, but, you know, what is the psychology behind that, and how you, you know, kind of get used to that pain?
Right. And so, you know, that's the idea that kind of pain, both kind of emotional pain and physical pain, is a normal part of life and a part of being a human, right? So that includes things like so-called quote-unquote negative feelings. There's a cultural script we have that bad feelings shouldn't be there, that if they are there, there's something wrong with you, and if you just tried harder, you could get rid of them. But actually, humans are not hardwired for happiness. They are much more hardwired for looking out for the threat, to find the problem, to find what needs fixing. And those so-called negative emotions are actually very adaptive in lots of different ways. And so the idea is that those things are part of being a human, right? There's actually a disorder that people can have where they don't experience physical pain, so they don't have pain receptors in their bodies. That is way more problematic than having too much pain. People who do not have pain receptors, they like scratch out their corneas without realizing it. They bleed to death without knowing it. Actually, the shifting around that we do in seats, you know, or when you're standing up, they will sit or stand in the exact same position and wear out their joints. It is like it's very difficult to keep those people alive, literally. They have very shortened lifespans for those reasons. And so the pain part of life is a natural, normal part of being a human. Now, we often fight a lot with that. And so we often spend a lot of time trying to not be sad, not be angry, not be anxious, not be scared. And the fight that we have with those normal things is often the thing that gets us into trouble. A classic example being an anxiety disorder, that people feel anxious. They don't want to feel anxious. That totally makes sense. It doesn't feel good to feel anxious. So they do a whole bunch of things to try to not feel anxious. And what ends up happening is they have to start avoiding more and more things in their life in order to avoid feeling anxious. And as a result of all the avoiding things, that's when it turns into a problem for people. So it was a really wake up call for me one day when I was running with a running group, and the person I was running with, he had run like over a dozen marathons, and he said to me, "Well, I don't enjoy running." And I was like, "What? What do you mean you don't enjoy running?" And he said, "I don't enjoy the act of putting one foot in front of the other." He's like, "But I really like being a runner." Right. So, you know, I think people who don't exercise regularly think that people who are marathon runners wake up and can't wait to go for a run. And actually, if you ask them, you know, like, "Okay, you're about to go for a 16 kilometer run. What's the first thing that pops into your mind when you wake up?" Right? It is not, "Oh, yes." It's usually some swear word. And so it's just that those people have learned to tolerate the discomfort of the exercise of running because it matters to them to be runners. Like, so for that gentleman, it was really like an achievement thing for him, that he really liked the competition of it and like the competing for your personal best and those kinds of things that really made it worth it for him to do it. And so I think it's helpful for people to know that even people who exercise regularly don't necessarily enjoy every moment of it. They've just gotten more used to the discomfort that shows up in doing the exercise.
You know, I like when you brought up anxiety as an example, because it's what I hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is this is how we build resilience, you know, is by going through things, not avoiding everything that could possibly cause any form of anxiety or any form of discomfort or pain. We build resilience by being able to set a goal, seeing it and going through it. And then there's a mental pleasure that comes from the fact that we have achieved something. So is that a little kind of where you're going with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, we spend a lot of effort, you know, metaphorically trying to prevent kids from falling down, but really we want to help them figure out how to get back up. Because life actually is inherently full of difficult, unfair things that happen to people that they have no control over. And so it's not about being able to avoid those things, because you can't in life. If you're really living a full life, we refer to it as full catastrophe living. That if you're really living a full life, it is full of joy and sadness. It is full of, you know, happiness and pain, love and pain. Those are things that like go together. If you really love someone, then you have to risk the pain of not having them. And so full catastrophe living means that you're doing all of those emotions. It's not just that you're encountering all of the positive things. And so people feeling like they actually can do those things and get through them is actually a much more resilient thing than being able to figure out how to avoid it.
Yeah, and that's great, because I remember this quote in your book. You say, "If we live long enough, we will experience both happiness and heartbreak, success and failure, love and loss, bliss and despair, health and illness, joy and regret. These opposites are a package deal, just like no one gets a free ride or a smooth journey," right? And I just loved that, because it's absolutely true. And, you know, you need to have a balance of both in order to be living fully. And is that kind of like when you're talking about how we have to build those values instead of like having goals necessarily, and the difference between the two? Like, how do you find that intrinsic motivation?
Right. So the term that, you know, gets used in this type of therapy and in the book is about values. And values are about like what really matters to you, who really matters to you, the kind of person you want to be, how you want to show up, the kind of life you want to have. And they're more like qualities. So they're more like things like being creative or being inspiring. And our culture is very obsessed with goals, right? And goals are things that happen or don't happen. Values are more like the direction that you're taking to get somewhere. And so, for example, if, you know, you can have the goal to get a university education, but there may also be values underlying that, like personal growth or challenge or intellectual curiosity. And if for some reason you can't get a university degree, then you may also be able to do other things to be able to, you know, express your curiosity. That's an ongoing thing. It doesn't just happen when you get to a goal. So, for example, if I want to be, you know, an engaged parent, that's a way that I want to show up all the time. And I don't ever get to the end of it, right? So I don't wake up one day and like, "Oh, done with being a good parent. I'm over that. I'm going to move on to something else now." right? That's presumably something that matters to me for a long time. And so part of the work in this book is figuring out how your healthy habits actually help you show up as the person you want to be. So rather than focusing on things like weight or health, we're actually thinking about who do you want to be, what kind of life do you want to have, and how does this healthy habit actually help you express that person? How does it help you show up as that person? So when I go to the gym, that doesn't have to be me time. I don't have to think about it as like, you know, convincing myself that I should have me time. That can be another way that I express my values of being an engaged parent, because when I go to the gym, I am better able to be present and to be engaged with my kid. I'm in a better mood. And so that's actually just one more way that I show up as the parent that I want to be, is by going to the gym.
All right.
Well, and that's what, you know, helps with long-term motivation, because those things are things that we want to keep being long-term and not just sort of goals that happen or don't happen. Once we hit a goal, we like stop working on that and we move on to some other goal. And so that doesn't necessarily produce the long-term change that we need to manage our health.
Well, you know, we get listener questions and comments at times. And first, I want to take the time to thank the listeners and the listeners that send in the questions, that they take their time. Oftentimes, it's people that are working in the middle of the day, so they want to listen later on, either through iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform they choose. And so again, I want to thank them. Here's one that's come in, and this one says, "What a funny title. I was complaining to my sister just the other day that I was tired of dieting or exercise plan that sound great, but I just can't stick to it. I just finished nursing school and my shifts at the hospital are constantly in flux. I feel that the stress of doing what I love is now my biggest enemy. I am looking forward to hearing how your book could help a person like me." And this is from Paulette in Missouri.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the reaction I have too, right? And many people do, is that these, you know, so-called like diets or things to do, most people can maybe follow that for a week if they're lucky. You know, usually it's only like till Friday and then kind of all falls apart on the weekend, right? And so one of the things in the book is actually about start small instead of start big, right? So I talk about it as the 90% rule. So only set a goal that you're 90% sure that you can achieve. And because what happens when you are achieving a goal is that you want to keep doing it. It feels good to be successful. And so it motivates you to keep going. If we feel like we're failing at a goal, then we naturally just want to stop trying. Right. So if you set the goal to go for a walk 3 times a week and you go twice, well, have you succeeded or failed? Technically, you failed because you were trying to go 3 times and you only went twice. If you set the goal to go once a week and you go walking twice a week, now have you succeeded or failed? Well, now you've succeeded simply by changing the goal. And so, you know, we just add on a series of 90% goals until you eventually get to where you want to be. So I work often with a lot of healthcare providers. So I work in a medical unit in the hospital. So I'm not in like a mental health unit. I'm in a medical unit at the hospital. And so I interact with healthcare providers a lot. Shift work is clearly a very big stressor. I know that. We know that sleep plays a big role in people's health, and shift work itself also, you know, is difficult to manage. And so again, I would choose something that is small and doable and something that you can keep working at. There's lots of things that you don't have control over in those kinds of jobs. And so thinking about the things that you can do, especially for healthcare providers, we get really caught up in it being about the patient. And so, you know, we're kind of notorious for not taking care of ourselves because we're so busy taking care of patients. And it's also to remember that when we're taking care of ourselves, that actually is a way for us to show up as the healthcare provider we want to be. So if, you know, we're rested, if we've eaten well, if we've exercised, we're actually going to be the healthcare provider we want to be. We're going to be better able to show up in that way. So again, to like link these self-care behaviors, not to, you know, me time or those kinds of things, but that this is another way I'm helping patients. So when I go to the gym, that's actually me, you know, helping my patients by being better able to show up as the healthcare provider I want to be.
Now, she touched on another thing that is one of my issues as well, which is when the schedule changes. You know, when my schedule is the same and I'm continuing to be in that structure, I seem to do really well. As soon as something changes, I go out of the state or out of the country, and all of a sudden everything's disrupted. What are some of the things they can do or exercises that can be done, maybe doing certain things at home or things that you can do that can keep you in enough of a structure that you don't fall off the wagon?
Yeah, so part of it is trying to replicate whatever structure you normally have at home wherever you're traveling, which may or may not be possible, right? If you're switching big time zones, sometimes that's not possible. I often stay on the time zone, like from where I am. And so that means sometimes I'm waking up at like 3 a.m. at whatever place I am, and I'm going to bed at 6 p.m. at night. But that allows me to keep the same kind of schedule and routine that I normally have. The other part is that life really just will happen, right? So the question isn't really, you know, will you fall off the wagon? You know, will you stop doing your healthy habits? You totally will. That's just part of life. The better question is, how quickly can you get back on? So how quickly can you get back to your healthy habits after you've fallen off the wagon? There's also lots of good research that says if you are kind and compassionate to yourself when we fall off the wagon or when we have personal setbacks, we're actually more willing to get going and to get started again. So being kind to ourselves instead of being like hard and critical on ourselves actually helps us get back to our healthy habits faster. And so for a lot of these healthy habits, it's just a series of falling off the wagon and getting back on. And we're just trying to spend more time on the wagon than we did before. And the more you practice getting back on the wagon, it actually gets easier to do over time.
All right. We are talking with Dana Lee Bagley, PhD, and the subject is healthy habits. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. When we come back, I'm going to ask, how healthy are North Americans really? We'll be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are talking about healthy habits, and specifically healthy habits that we might not necessarily want to have, but we know that they're good for us. We're speaking with Dana Lee Bagley. With me also is V. Gomez. And the question that we left when we went to break was, how healthy are North Americans really?
Yeah, so the data is pretty clear that we're really not that healthy. pretty clear. You know, when you look at some of the healthy habits, like, you know, maintaining a healthy weight, exercising regularly, regular fruits and vegetables, not smoking, then the percentage of Americans doing those four behaviors is something like 3%. And so, you know, most of the statistics are that people, you know, the majority of people are either overweight or have obesity. And so we really do not do most of the things we know we should be doing. There's a lot of environmental factors that contribute to that. We've created a society that is not in any way conducive to healthy habits. So that is, you know, also a factor in why people are not healthy. And so there are also like increasing rates of all kinds of chronic diseases that are related to lifestyle, including things like cancer, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease. And so these are all kind of increasing in the population.
You know, it's funny. It's very interesting that you're saying that, because we do live in a society where we're surrounded by this health drink and this wellness shot and this yoga pose and this exercise class and this fitness class. And, you know, it's almost an influx of the media that comes our way about it. So, you know, why is it that we're not reciprocating to that? Is it could you expand a little more about that? Why is it that we're not sort of taking on this like subconscious advertising that's coming our way and sort of being motivated to be more healthy? Why is it working almost the opposite?
Right. So it's because the majority, even though like you might encounter some of those like healthy kinds of advertising, the majority of the advertising is not. The majority of the advertising is about French fries and burgers and shakes and all kinds of processed foods that the food industry has spent billions of dollars to make us want to eat more of. And so, you know, if you drive home, the billboards you encounter are more likely to be unhealthy foods, like processed foods, than they are about whole foods. The fact that you're driving instead of walking, the fact that we have sedentary jobs where we don't tend to move around a lot. Even things like if you go to like a sports arena, often, you know, the food that is available is things like hot dogs, hamburgers, French fries. So that environment has already limited your choices to only having processed foods available to you. You know, it's rare to like have like decent salads available. I go to lots of hockey practices with my kid and, you know, that's not what shows up in the vending machine. Is, you know, they don't have salads and apples in the vending machine. So the majority of our environment actually is prompting and triggering unhealthy habits. And then just by nature, we also don't, you know, the reason that healthy habits suck is because part of our brain structure, which has like evolved in caveman times, is really well suited to being a caveman, but not at all well suited to our modern environment where we have such plentiful access to high calorie foods and low levels of exercise. And so we are hardwired to want to avoid pain, to seek pleasure, to take the path of least resistance, and to live for today. Those are awesome principles if you were a caveman. They're very helpful to keep you alive, right? So, I mean, pain was usually associated with death. You know, we were getting the same amount of exercise that triathletes get nowadays. So if you had a chance to rest, you should totally rest. And our life expectancy was about 30. So you really wanted to be doing things that were working now, not things that might keep you healthier, you know, 20 years from now. Healthy habits, on the other hand, have require you to do the exact opposite. So you have to accept pain. You should go for a run. You have to not have pleasure, right? Which is don't eat that ice cream. You should do the thing that takes the most amount of effort. You should take the stairs instead of the elevator, and you should live for the future. So don't you know that might kill you in 20 years, right? So this is why we're actually hardwired to not want to do any of these healthy habits. And that caveman brain functions very automatically. And so it just shows up. Those instinctive responses just show up. Now, we can override that system, and we have a frontal lobe that allows us to override that caveman brain. But the frontal lobe requires us to have deliberate, conscious effort. And so if you're not being specific, if you're not being attentive and conscious about how you're you know, managing your life, then the caveman brain is going to take over and again lead you to the unhealthy habits, which then the environment is also making more accessible to us than the healthy habits.
Well, Dana, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I have a magic wand, and with this magic wand, you can make three changes in the world that would help people to be able to make better healthy habits. What were those three things that you would do? You now have the power. Go for it.
Right. That's great. So one, I think you definitely need to target the environment. So when we look at something like smoking, right, it was a public policy that dramatically changed rates of smoking and the death rate as a result of smoking. And so those kind of public policies, even like things like seatbelts, wearing helmets, all of those things actually like improve people's health. And they are public policy, so high level decision making. So there needs to be something around that for basically the factors that influence obesity. And those would be things like the amount of processed foods, the amount of whole foods that are available, you know, even things when they have like the calorie counts on menus, you know, are starting to move in that direction. Some places have extra taxes you know, on pop or those kinds of things. And many people object to those kinds of public policies because they don't want other people to make decisions for them. The fact, though, is that other people are already making choices for them because the pop is less expensive, you know, than whole fruit. That decision actually has already been made for you. And so we're just doing the same thing, but making it a healthier option for you. So, you know, those environments have already limited your choices. You don't actually have the free will you think you do. So that would be, you know, the main thing that I would do would be to change the environment so that it is more conducive to health and to picking healthy habits.
Okay.
I think I think there's a lot of messaging that we get that I think is really unhelpful, that somehow you should like exercise, that it should be easy, that you should enjoy it. You know, I don't think any of those things are true. I think it's just about your willingness to experience the discomfort in order to be healthy. And also, you know, that somehow we shouldn't feel bad, that there's something wrong with you if you feel bad. And if you just tried hard enough, that you would feel good. Again, I don't think that's how humans are hardwired. And so I think all of those messaging actually creates an environment that is not kind. It's not compassionate. It's not supportive. It's not, you know, producing resilient people.
Well, while we're talking about these types of things, because you're talking about sugary foods, salty foods, or drinks and things like that, share with everybody a little bit about how the brain reacts to fatty, sugary, or salty foods.
Right. So our brains, again, are actually hardwired for the reward centers in our brain, the pleasure centers in our brain, to light up with sugar, for example. So your brain will actually light up better to sugar than it will for cocaine. And so, again, this was an adaptive thing when we were cave people because sugar, fat, and salt were not readily available. They were hard to find. And you had to do a lot of work to find those things and to be able to get them. And so the human body has come up with all kinds of systems to motivate you to go get these very difficult substances. Now, of course, in our modern world, they're not at all difficult to find, right? You can have 2,000 calories worth of sugar in a single Starbucks cup. So they're not difficult to find. And so it ends up being this mismatch between how our minds work and our bodies work and our modern environment, because we still react, right? People often come to me for treatment because they want to deal with their emotional eating, right? And they'll say, well, I have this dysfunctional relationship with food because I use food to feel better. And I always say, guess what? In the short term, it actually totally does make you feel better, right? So while you're eating it, you are feeling better. You're hardwired to feel better. It's just that in the long term, it's not helping. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with you that you're using food to feel better. That's exactly how you're hardwired. Now, I can understand if you're doing too much of it, that you need additional coping strategies. That's not how you want to live your life. But you're actually not being dysfunctional. That's how the brain works. We just have to be aware of how the brain works so we can make better decisions.
And is that sort of similar with the whole, like, I'll do it tomorrow type of mentality, right? Because sometimes it's like, exactly. All right, I'm just going to have this burger right now and tomorrow I'll eat that salad, right?
Exactly. Absolutely, right? All those, you know, I don't have time for that. I'm too tired to do it. I'll do it tomorrow. All of those, again, were adaptive things when you were a caveman and you were trying to conserve energy, right? So, you know, if we were getting the amount of exercise triathletes get, if you could rest, you should rest, right? You needed to save that energy for some predator might be chasing after you. So, you know, you didn't have to be fast. You just had to be faster than the other guy to be our ancestor, right? And so if you had a chance to rest, you absolutely should rest and conserve that energy. And so all of those automatic thoughts show up to convince us to conserve our energy. And if we were cave people, this would be fantastic advice. Again, in our modern world where we sit all day, where we drive places, right, where we're not active, that advice isn't good advice anymore. But our caveman mind doesn't know that, and it keeps giving us the same advice it's always given us.
Yes, you're absolutely true. I find similar when I, you know, when I'm talking to my students about why they should get into yoga, you know, and it's like, how do you get past that hump of like, oh, I'll just do it tomorrow, or I don't have enough time. One of the biggest things I hear a lot is, you know, I don't have enough energy, or I'm too tired.
Yeah.
What's your sort of response to that? When, especially, I know you've done some work with, you know, people with chronic illness and autoimmune and things like that. So how do you motivate that person or get it past their mind that they're not too tired or they don't have lack of energy?
Well, one thing we talk about is, you know, this, whatever activity it is, like going for a walk or going to the gym or meditating or something like that, this healthy habit you're going to do, do you feel more energetic at the end of that than when you started, right? And actually most people will say that actually they feel better after they exercise or after they, meditate, those kinds of things. And so it's sort of like a trick of our mind, right? Again, it's like another way our mind is trying to convince us to conserve energy by making us feel too tired to do it. Mm. And one of the skills in the book is really about managing those thoughts in a different way so you don't get as caught up in them. So are you too tired to go to the gym? I don't know. That's actually a pretty difficult question to answer. If I say, you know, when you go to the gym, is that helping you be the person you want to be? Does that move you towards a life that matters to you? Is that the kind of person you want to be? People actually are pretty good at answering that question. They're like, oh, you know, if I get caught up in like, I'm too tired, it's never going to work, what's the point? Like, that does not move me towards a life that matters to me. And so that question, you know, is this moving you towards or away from what matters to you, is a better way of deciding which thoughts are helpful for us and which thoughts we just kind of want to let go of in order to do these healthy habits. And so most of the book is actually focused on skills about how to actually do it. So there's not very much in the book about what you should do to be healthy. It's primarily skills of how do you actually do it. Most people know the things they should be doing to be healthy. They just get caught up in these same thoughts and feelings that stop us, that actually show up for entirely adaptive reasons, but they're just a mismatch to our modern environment. And so it's figuring out basically how to activate your frontal lobe so you can make choices and decisions that are consistent with who you want to be in your modern world, despite the advice that your caveman mind is giving you.
You know, and it's one of the things that I loved about the book is that not only did you answer questions just like you just did, that the book answers some of those questions, but you do it in a very humorous way. and that makes it so much more enjoyable, because I think that for a lot of us, I think we know what it is that we're supposed to be doing. So if we're reading something and if we're reading something and it's just telling us, you know, you need to do this and you need to do this and you need to do this. You know, after a while, it's like, okay, I know I should do that. Mm. But to me, as I'm reading the book and I didn't feel like I was being lectured to. I sort of thought that we were having a conversation, and at times you were joking and making it more humorous. And then before I knew it, I was much further along in the book. I'm going, I'm really enjoying this.
Yes, so, it's a great read.
Right? Yeah. So for everybody out there, it really is a good read. It's it's fun, but at the same time, you know, you're going, yeah, you know, that really is what I need to be doing. So, and I appreciate that.
Part of the goal, you know, one of the reasons that I wrote the book and part of like my values is about reach, right? It's about reaching people that I wouldn't normally get to talk to and sharing scientific knowledge in a way that is actually digestible and applicable and practical. And so that's what I really aim for with the book, which is great to hear that was your, you know, experience of it, because everything that's in the book is actually empirically supported. So science has shown that it works. And I also talk about, like, I've used this with, you know, hundreds of patients that I've seen over my career. And I actually use it on myself all the time to get myself motivated and to stick with healthy habits. And so, you know, it's meant to be an easy read. And I think a lot of people experience that they feel lectured and guilted and shamed about what they're not doing to be healthy. And this is really trying to take a different approach about being kind, being compassionate, right? And finding reasons to do the hard work of being healthy.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And, you know, you're talking about being kind, compassionate, and, you know, I feel like sometimes, especially as a yogi, there's a voice in my head that's not so nice. And then there's that voice in my head that's like really encouraging me and saying, no, you can do it. And, you know, when I first began yoga, it was hard to listen to that voice. I wanted to kind of listen to the one that wants to take the easy route, right? So, you know, how do you sort of develop that and really develop the frontal lobe and that consciousness and that motivation you need to sort of, you know, think like that, really?
Yeah. So, and that's the majority of the book is about teaching skills that basically are activating your frontal lobe so that you can be more in charge of your behavior. You know, that critical voice, again, is a caveman voice, was very adaptive for cavemen. You know, it was good to look for what was wrong, look for the threat, look for the danger. Those are our ancestors, right? The caveman who's like, I'm just going to hang out here in the forest and not worry and just, you know, look at the flowers and smell the beautiful, right? Yeah. He's not our ancestor. He got eaten by something, right? So that critical voice is very, is, you know, universal and part of our caveman brain, and it shows up automatically. And there's a whole chapter actually about self-compassion and how can you practice being compassionate with yourself. So most of these are actually skills that you can get better at. And the more you practice at them, the better you get at doing them. One of the examples of one of the skills is about imagining your thoughts like footballs. So if you imagine like your thought as a football, there's two options when you get the thought. So, you know, you might have the thought, I'm too tired to go to the gym. And you can either run down the field with the football, right? And that's like, yeah, I'm definitely too tired. I didn't get enough sleep and I just feel so exhausted. I'm definitely not going to be able to make it to the gym, right? That's the sort of running down the field with the football. The other version is you get this thought and you imagine it as a football, right? I'm too tired to go to the gym. And you kind of notice it and you're like, oh, look, there's one of those thoughts about that I can't go to the gym. I'm just going to put it down on the ground right here. And you sort of imagine putting that football down, right? And that's the difference between getting caught up in our thoughts, right? Running down the field with the football versus trying to unhook from them so that you're better able to do the things that matter to you, right? About trying to engage in your healthy habits. And so that's a skill, right? Being able to see your thoughts as footballs and being able to put the football down is a skill that you can practice. Now, there's lots of times when you absolutely should run down the field with the football with your thoughts, right? So this morning, I had a thought, get up, get dressed, go to work. And it's really good that I ran down the field with that football, right? So we're not trying to get people to never follow their thoughts.
Yes.
And again, the decision-making about which thoughts do I run with and which don't I run with isn't about whether it's true or not true, right? It's about, is that going to move you towards away from what matters to you? Right, towards or away. And people often are pretty good at deciding that, whether it's a toward or away move. The true or not true thing can really get us, you know, caught up in all kinds of debates in our head that usually aren't that helpful. So, you know, is this going to move me towards? If it is, run down the field with the football. Mm-hmm. If it's going to move me away, can I imagine kind of putting that football down? Right. And then rinse and repeat, because your brain's going to throw you another football. That's how minds work. Right. So, if like you're too tired didn't work, well, how about you don't have time for that, right? Oh, there's a football. I don't have time for that. I can run down the field with that. Oh my gosh, yeah, I got to send this email. I got to do this. I got to do that. I definitely don't have time to go to the gym. Or I can be like, oh, hey, there's that football. I'm just going to put it down right here. Now, is it true that I don't have time? I don't know.
Right?
Over time, if I never invest in myself, I do not show up as the person I want to be. I don't build a life that matters to me. I am not living, you know, the kind of life that I want to have. And that's why I put the football down, whether it's true or not true.
Yeah. And I like your analogy. And as you were going through, and if my brain was jumping ahead and I thought, you know, you said, oh, I'm going to run down. And I thought, your next one was, or am I going to punt? You know?
Luckily, I actually don't know sports that well. So that's like the extent of my metaphor is like, you can either run or put it down. That's all I got. Right. There's obviously like way more complicated things you can do with footballs, but I don't know any of those things. So those
you're just tackling the core. You're like, put it down. Get it down.
I know, I love it. So we have another question that has come in. This one reads, I read on the Answers for the Family site that you promote something called ACT, and it is based on neuroscience. This is fascinating to me because I am a personal trainer working with a group of women primarily in their 50s and 60s who are struggling with getting in shape and losing weight. I have been looking for something a little different as recommended reading to as a companion to my program. Can you describe how your book and ACT might help me motivate my clients? And this is from Trudy in California.
Yeah, perfect. So and it's pronounced ACT, versus ACT is called ACT, and that stands for Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, which is something I talked about earlier. And that's basically an empirically supported intervention that has been shown to help a variety of different conditions and problems, including things like depression, anxiety, OCD, psychosis, as well as things like pain, smoking, obesity. And so it's been shown to be effective for a variety of different things. It's a type of cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, if people have heard about that. And the book is basically, it's based on ACT interventions. So all of the interventions that are described in the book are all consistent with that ACT model and theory. And so that model is really about thinking about the things you do and don't control, focusing on the things you do control. And so we make the argument that the thing you have the most amount of control over is your behavior, so that we actually don't have as much control over our thoughts and feelings, especially those automatic thoughts and feelings that show up that society tells us we do. We really don't have that much control over that. And so instead of focusing on those thoughts and feelings, we're trying to focus on behavior. Lots of people hear the acceptance part of that title, and it, you know, in our culture, acceptance kind of means give up or give in, and that's not really meant by it. It's really about acknowledging what is, right? So it's about taking what is given and just acknowledging what is, what I do and don't have control over, and focusing on the things that we have control over. So for example, we don't have control over our weight. Weight is an outcome that is influenced by a variety of different factors, many of which we have no control over, including things like genetics, your learning history, the walkability score of your neighborhood, how many McDonald's are in your neighborhood. All of these things influence weight, and often we don't have that much control over them. How much you eat and how much you exercise are only a small part of what influences weight. So how hydrated you are, how much sleep you have, how much stress hormones you have in your body, those all influence weight also. If you focus on weight, inevitably at some point you're going to feel frustrated because you don't control it. And so your efforts aren't going to get you where you want to go. And so instead we focus on behavior. So, you know, things that can influence your weight, like walking or eating fruits and vegetables or eating protein or whole foods or staying hydrated. Those are actually behaviors that you can do, right? So if you try harder to go for a walk, you're a lot more likely to go for a walk. But if you try harder to lose weight, you can actually increase the stress levels and stress hormones in your body, and it makes it actually less likely for you to lose weight.
Yeah, that's so a great
point. So by focusing
on
behaviors, yeah, it's huge, right?
Yes.
By focusing on behaviors, you're going to be healthier regardless of what your body does with it, right? So the line that I say, you know, in the book is, my job is to do my healthy habits. What my body does with that isn't up to me, right? There's so many factors that control how that shows up in our body. But if you focus on behaviors, you will be healthier overall and be more likely to be able to do the things that matter to you, right? So chasing your grandkids around or, you know, walking down the field to the baseball show for the baseball game for your kids. Those kinds of things, because you'll be healthier regardless.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point you bring up in regards to the stress, is that the stress will actually build up more cortisol, and then your cortisol will then will cause you to get fatter, and you're stressing over it, as opposed to, like you're saying, just do the behavior. Don't stress over it. Don't worry about it. Just focus on the behavior and do it.
Yep.
I love it.
So the part you control is your behavior, what your body does, but that's not up to you.
Well, Dana, thank you so much for coming on. Time has flown by, but it's such a great topic. And again, so for everybody out there, if you want to get a hold of Dana, or you want to get more information, the website is drleebagley.com. And you can also go to empowerpartnership.org. And if you need to get the spelling or anything, or if you're driving, go to our answersforthefamily.com website. We will have everything there in how to get a hold of Dana. Dana, thank you so much for sharing time with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. And V, thank you for
thank
coming
you
in
so
and joining.
Much, Alan.
Yes, I hope we can come back. You can come back again. We can talk a little bit more about yoga.
Yes.
All right, that sounds good. And for everybody out, please be sure to put on your calendar, tune in next Monday when we will discuss the new book, Love at Every Breath, Awareness, Imagination, and Energetic Transformation. For everybody, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.